I betrayed her trust.
You cheated on her?
No. Well, not in the way you're thinking, anyway.
Then how?
It's a long story.
I guess you're lucky you have a captive audience. You do know my legs don't work, and I can't get up and leave no matter how boring your sorry-ass tale of woe is, right?
I sighed. Yeah. Even though Mr. Thorne already knew the worst of me, I was embarrassed to admit what I'd done. At least most of the shitty stuff I'd pulled over the years could be blamed on the alcohol.
Go on, he encouraged. Trust me. Whatever it is, I've done worse, son. I'm not going to think any less of you.
Okay. I took a deep breath, readying to start at the beginning. Well, I told you our families don't get along. Our grandfathers fought over a woman named Grace more than 50 years ago. Grace died a few months ago, leaving 49% of the hotel each to my and Sophia's grandfathers. Mr. Thorne grumbled.
Only thing my ex ever gave me was divorce papers.
I smiled. Anyway, my grandfather loathes Sophia's grandfather, and you know what a bad place I've been in with him ever since my last screw up.
He nodded. I do.
I inhaled deeply. Well, my grandfather called me right after I'd gotten off the plane Sophia had been on with me. I mentioned who I'd just sat next to, and he laid into me about getting distracted by a skirt. I shook my head. He told me to turn around and get back on the next return flight, said I wasn't the man for the job because women and booze were my weaknesses. I told him he was wrong, but he said he'd send my father instead. Then he hung up on me. I'd just exited security, so I figured I'd get some fresh air and decide what to do next. 10 minutes later, Grandfather called back and said he'd changed his mind and had a new strategy. Since I was a womanizer, he wanted me to seduce Sophia and get the Sterling's bid from her. Mr. Thorne's eyes were dark with disappointment.
And you agreed to do that?
I closed my eyes and hung my head, nodding. I didn't think beyond getting him to let me stay so I could prove I'm not a total loser. I would have agreed to anything. After I sobered up, I realized I didn't have much left in my life except for my job. I'd lost Caroline, and most of my friends were partiers, and I had to take myself out of that environment. I scoffed. You're pretty much the only friend I've got. He shook his head.
Of all the things we've talked about over the years, that last part has to be the saddest. But we'll come back to that. Let's keep our focus on the girl. So you told your grandfather you'd do it, and then what?
I shrugged. Then I fell in love with her.
So you started things with the intention of seducing this woman, and that changed?
That's the thing. Even though I told my grandfather I'd play his game, I never really did. Sophia and I have had this odd love-hate relationship since high school. So when I was giving her a hard time and things got heated, it wasn't part of playing her. It was real. It was always freaking real. Nothing I ever said or did with Sophia had to do with my grandfather. I raked my fingers through my hair, tugging at the strands. But every time he asks if I'm going to be able to come through with their bid information, I assure him I will.
But you never intended to get that information out of Sophia?
I shook my head. I was planning on making up a number a little under mine and rolling the dice. If my work coming up with the number was right, we'd win the bid anyway, and no one would be the wiser.
Did you tell Sophia that?
She never gave me the chance to.
And now you think she isn't going to believe the truth when you finally lay it out for her?
I'm certain she won't. The entire thing sounds like bullshit. Even when I just told you the story. Mr. Thorne nodded.
I hate to say it, but you're right.
Great. My shoulders slumped. I came here thinking you'd tell me something different.
Considering I'm your only friend, I'd say it's my job to tell it like it is. You don't need me blowing smoke up your ass. You need a friend to vent to work through your problems with, and help you figure out how to solve them. And most of all, you need someone to remind you that drinking is only going to make shit worse.
I looked up at him. I know. I guess I just wanted to pretend there's an easy way out of this mess for a little while.
I know, son. When something good happens, our first instinct is to drink to celebrate. When something bad happens, we're ready to drink to forget. And when nothing happens, we drink to make it happen. That's why we're alcoholics. But we can't drown our problems, because our sorrows are Olympic swimmers. I forced a smile. Thanks. Anytime. That's what best friends are for. Just don't expect me to braid your hair. By the way, I've been meaning to mention that you could use a damn haircut. I wound up staying at Mr. Thorne's for most of the night. We never did come up with an easy way out of the mess I'd gotten myself into. But it wasn't for lack of trying. Unfortunately, there just wasn't an easy way out of this one. I hope there was a way out at all.
Chapter 26. Knock, knock, knock. It was almost midnight. Unless housekeeping was knocking on my office door, which I sincerely doubted, there was only one person it could be at this hour. I kept quiet, hoping he'd think I left my light on and go away. The last thing I needed was a showdown with Weston. I felt drained, physically and emotionally exhausted, after spending the last 2 days with my grandfather and father. Tonight, when I'd snuck back into the Countess, all I'd wanted to do was crawl into bed. But my grandfather had asked me to send him a bunch of information, and since I was on shaky ground after what I'd told him, I wanted to show him I was 100% committed. So I'd come right up to my office, before even going to my room. I'd been relieved to find Weston's office light off when I'd passed by a few minutes ago. Knock, knock, knock. I held my breath the second time.
Soph, I know you're in there. I've been watching the hotel's security cameras on my phone since you left, waiting for you to come back. I saw you walk in a little while ago.
Just go away, Weston. Not surprisingly, he didn't listen. Instead, he cracked open my office door. But rather than swing it wide, he stopped with it slightly ajar.
I'm coming in. Please don't throw anything. I just want 2 minutes.
I grimaced. As much as I hated him at the moment, a tiny part of me felt bad that I'd thrown his cell and injured him. I'd never been violent toward another person. The door slowly creaked open until Weston was fully visible. The way he looked caused an involuntary ache in my chest. His hair was disheveled, and it looked like he hadn't shaved in a few days. He wore a wrinkly dress shirt, slacks that I was pretty sure he'd slept in, and a large band-aid covered his forehead above his left eyebrow. I sighed. My mood had shifted yesterday from angry to sad. I no longer wanted to throw a cell phone. Instead, I'd cried myself to sleep last night. I never even cried when Liam and I split up, and we'd been together for a long time. Though I wasn't about to give Weston the satisfaction of knowing how hurt I was. It was bad enough I'd fallen for his con. My pride couldn't take him also seeing how pathetic and sad it had left me. So I tried my best to channel mean and bitter, though I lacked the energy for it. I just wanted this game over so I could move on. What do you want, Weston? I'm exhausted from traveling and need to finish some work before I go to bed. He stepped inside and quietly clicked the door closed behind him.
I'm so sorry, Soph.
Okay, great, thank you. Are we done now? Weston's puppy dog eyes feigned hurt pretty damn well. If I didn't know what a stellar actor he was, I might have believed he was as upset as I was.
I know it doesn't look good from what you read, but I swear, I never took any information from you, and I was never planning on giving anything to my family. You have to believe me.
No, I actually don't. What I have to do is learn from the mistakes I've made, and believing anything that came out of your mouth was mistake number one. Trust me, I won't be doing that again. He took a few steps closer.
My grandfather didn't trust me here when I told him you were running the show for the Sterlings. Based on my track record the last few years, he knew women and alcohol were my downfall. He wanted my father to take over. The only way he'd let me stay was if I agreed to try to get information from you.
My father told me to do the same thing. I believe his exact words were to use my feminine wiles to pump information out of you. But you already know that, don't you? And do you know why you already know that? Because I told you about it. Weston closed his eyes.
I know.
I felt the familiar burn in my throat, the precursor to tears. Swallowing hard, I said,
"And I was dumb enough to leave you alone in my suite with all my files and my laptop. You must have had a good laugh as you rummaged through my things. I was the easiest mark ever."
"No, it wasn't like that. I never once looked through your stuff, I swear."
My head spun with all the dumb things I'd done around this man. "Jesus, we had sex without a condom. Do I need to get tested for STDs right away? Did you lie about that, too?"
Weston shut his eyes. "No, I'm clean. I would never do that."
God, I really had been an idiot. I'd placed my trust in my sworn enemy. Trusted him over the judgment of my own family, and in the process jeopardized my career.
"What can I do, Soph?" Weston pleaded. "What can I do to prove to you that I'm telling the truth? We can call my grandfather on speakerphone, and I'll ask him if I ever gave him any information. Anything. Just tell me."
I shook my head. "If you'll do anything for me, then go away, Weston." Our eyes met, and his were filled with tears. God, I was such an idiot. Even after everything that had happened, I still wanted to believe him. I wanted to pretend I'd never seen the email and go back to the way things were. I'd really fallen hard. Eventually, he nodded.
"Okay."
He turned around and opened the door, but I thought of one thing I needed him to do for me, so I called after him. "Hey, I told my family I'd accidentally left some of my work papers in an area you had access to. I was too embarrassed to tell my father and my grandfather that access was in my bedroom, where I'd given you more than just insight into our bid. So if you want to do something for me, at least keep up that charade. The last thing the men in my family need to know is that I let my emotions get in the way of business."
Weston winced. "I get it."
After he walked out, I sat staring at my closed office door. It felt symbolic. The way we'd left things the other night had been so unfinished. We'd obviously needed to have a final conversation. Now that it was over, I should feel some closure. Though closure meant accepting what had happened and walking away from the closed door. My heart didn't want to walk away. So instead, I'd have to put a double lock on that door to make sure it didn't accidentally creak open again.
Chapter 27. 2 days later, I waited impatiently to see if Sophia would show up. We had a meeting scheduled with Elizabeth Barton, the hotel's attorney, to discuss some last-minute contract renewal issues. I'd expected to get a call that the meeting was canceled, or at least moved to a conference call instead of being in person. I'd arrived a half hour before our scheduled appointment, just in case Sophia showed. But with every minute that ticked by, I lost a little more hope that she would. At 9 on the nose, a flash of red appeared in the doorway. The entrance to the lobby was a wall of glass, so I watched as Sophia hesitated with her hand on the door. She took a deep breath, raised her chin, and squared her shoulders, and I swear I fucking fell even harder for her. All along, I'd thought our arguing made her so irresistible to me. Her anger was like my flint, and I was the little boy who liked to play with matches. But in this moment, I realized it wasn't her anger I'd been attracted to at all. It was her strength. When she walked into a room, her beauty was undeniable. When she smiled, it made my knees weak. But when she straightened her spine and her eyes glinted with determination, she wasn't the flint to my spark. She was the fire, an undeniably beautiful wildfire. Gorgeous. Simply perfect. My heart pounded in my chest as she walked to the front desk and said something. Though she was only 5 feet away and the reception area was otherwise quiet, I couldn't hear a single word. The blood rushing in my ears was way too loud. Ever since our conversation the other night, I'd been practicing what I would say to her if I got another chance. I'd planned to give her more details, lay all my cards on the table, and convince her I'd never planned to betray her. But truly, none of that mattered anymore. Whether I'd planned to go through with stealing information from her or not was almost irrelevant. The fact that I'd agreed to do it and never told her about it was betrayal enough. What I needed to focus on now wasn't what I'd done wrong, but how I felt about her and what I was going to do to make things right. With a new plan of action, I got up and walked over to the receptionist, where Sophia was still standing.
"Oh, hi,"
the woman said. "I was just telling Ms. Sterling that Ms. Barton is running a few minutes behind. She had an overseas conference call before your meeting, and it started late." Sophia stood a little taller, completely ignoring me next to her. "Do you know how long she's going to be?" she asked. "I have another meeting after this." I would have bet my bank account there was no meeting after this.
"She shouldn't be more than 10 or 15 minutes," the receptionist said. "Can I get you a cup of coffee or tea while you wait?"
Sophia sighed.
"No, thank you."
She looked to me, and I waved my hand. "I'm good."
"Okay, well, why don't you both have a seat, and I'll let you know as soon as she's off her call."
"Actually," I took one step closer, "would you happen to have an empty conference room?"
Sure. "The one you'll be meeting in is available. Did you need to make a call or something?"
I shook my head. "No, Ms. Sterling and I have some business to discuss. Do you think we could make use of that room before Ms. Barton is available?" The receptionist smiled.
"Sure, no problem,"
she stood.
"Why don't you follow me and I'll let Elizabeth know where you'll be when she's done."
Sophia seemed momentarily confused, so I took advantage, knowing once she regained her footing, she wouldn't voluntarily walk into a room with me. I put my hand low on her back and held out my other for her to walk first.
"After you?"
Her jaw clenched, but she wasn't about to make a scene. That wasn't Sophia's style, at least not in the lobby in front of the receptionist. Though I had no doubt she'd ream me a new asshole once the conference room door clicked shut, so I'd have to keep her off her game by jumping in before she had a chance. We followed the receptionist into a long conference room. I was glad it wasn't one of those fishbowl rooms that corporate America loved these days, where everything that went on inside was visible to anyone passing by.
"Are you sure I can't get you coffees?"
the receptionist asked from the door after we were both inside.
"No, thank you,"
Sophia said. "I'm good." I smiled and motioned to the door. "If you don't mind, I'm going to shut this."
"Oh, sure, yeah. I'll do that for you."
She grabbed the door handle and gently closed it behind her.
"Weston,"
Sophia jumped right in, but I cut her off. "I need 30 seconds. If you want, I'll go wait in the lobby after that." I had no idea how much time we had, or if we'd get a chance to talk again before we wrapped things up at the Countess, so I needed to say what I needed to say, and fast. Sophia's lips flattened to a grim line. She didn't acknowledge granting me the 30 seconds, but I figured her not talking might be as good as I was going to get. So I paced back and forth, looking down at the floor, trying to choose the right words. My ribs felt like a weight was sitting on them, squeezing the air from my lungs. And I knew exactly what that weight was. I had this moment to get everything off my chest. Now or never. Don't be a chicken shit all your life. So I took a deep breath and looked across the table, waiting for Sophia to look up. Eventually, the awkward silence tricked her into meeting my gaze, and I went for it. Fuck it. Go big or go home. "I love you, Sophia. I don't know when it started or if it even matters anymore, but I need you to know it." At first, I saw hope bloom in her eyes. They widened with surprise, and the slightest hint of a smile formed at the corners of her mouth. But just as quickly as that hope had blossomed, it wilted. And I watched as she remembered. Remembered how I'd fucked her over. Remembered how she's supposed to hate me. Remembered how nothing I say should be trusted. In the span of less than 10 seconds, that slightest upturn at the corners of her mouth melted into a giant downturn, and her wide eyes narrowed with suspicion.
"You have no idea what love is."
I shook my head. "You're wrong. I might not know a lot of things, like how to have some balls when dealing with my family, or how to tell my grandfather no when he tells me to do something morally reprehensible, or even how to be in a relationship, because fuck knows I've never had a real-life role model of what a normal one is supposed to look like. But I absolutely positively know that I'm in love with you. You know how?" She didn't answer. But she also didn't tell me to stop.
so I kept going. I know I love you, because for the 5 years since Caroline died, I have never wanted to be a better man. I've never once looked in the mirror and given a shit whether I liked what I saw. But every morning since you got on that plane and made me move out of that window seat, I've stared at myself, wondering what I could do today to be a better person, a better man who deserves a woman like you. I know I love you because my family would disown me for falling in love with you, and that doesn't scare me half as much as you leaving this room without believing that my heart belongs to you more than it's ever belonged to anyone. I know I love you because for my entire life, I felt like I had no purpose except to be spare parts for my sister. Until you. I know I love you because... I shook my head and dragged a hand through my hair. Because you are the finest, loveliest, tenderest, and most beautiful person I have ever known. And even that is an understatement. Sophia's lips parted, and tears welled in her eyes. I didn't have to tell her I'd borrowed that one from F. Scott Fitzgerald instead of Shakespeare. A month ago, I'd searched for quotes to taunt her about her ex, but lately I'd started to enjoy reading them. So many reminded me of her, like that one. I cleared my throat. Soph, I fucked up. It's not the way you think, but I realize it doesn't matter if I intended to give my grandfather any information. I should have told you about it, or not led him to believe I was playing his game. I didn't have to violate your trust to lose it. Even the smallest lie can create the biggest damage. She sniffled. I feel like an idiot for wanting to believe you. She shook her head and looked down. I just can't, Weston. I can't. Soph, no, don't say that. Look at me. She kept shaking her head. When a tear leaked from her eye, she looked up at me and whispered, Countess. My forehead wrinkled. Then I remembered I'd made her pick a safe word in case things got to be too much. She'd never said it until now. It felt like my heart was breaking in two. Sophia walked to the conference room door. I went to reach for her, but she put her hand up, stopping me. Please don't. I need to use the restroom. Her voice was so soft and filled with emotion that it sliced through me. Don't follow me. Please let me be. You said what you wanted to say. I listened. I really did. And I want to be left alone now. I dropped my head and nodded. Go. I don't want to make you feel worse. Sophia didn't come back for 10 long minutes. When she did, I could tell she'd been crying. I felt like an idiot for making her upset right before a business meeting. We were both quiet as we waited at the conference table. I stole glances at her while she avoided eye contact. When Elizabeth Barton eventually walked in, Sophia finally met my eyes. I knew it was causing her pain to sit across the table from me, so I stood as Elizabeth took her seat. I'd gotten what I came for, and the rest of it didn't matter. None of it mattered. The very least I could do was make Sophia feel a little lighter by not having to look at me. I buttoned my jacket and cleared my throat. Sorry, Elizabeth, but something's come up and I need to run. The attorney looked surprised. I'm sorry, should we reschedule? I looked over at Sophia. No, you two go ahead. I'll catch up with you at some point if you have time. Elizabeth rightly looked confused. Oh, okay. Well, why don't you book a time on your way out with the receptionist and we'll talk later. I gave a noncommittal nod. Sure. Over the next 48 hours, I visited Mr. Thorne 4 times. It was either that or drink a bottle of vodka. I ignored phone calls from my grandfather and never did catch up with Elizabeth Barton to get the information I needed from her. Just about the only responsibility I didn't blow off was dealing with the Boltons. The estimates and revised construction plans had come in, and I worked with Travis on cutting some things that would mean we'd still have a shot of finishing everything on time for the first event planned next month. It wasn't that I gave a shit about the construction any more than anything else, but Sophia was vulnerable, and I didn't want her to spend any time with a man who had an interest in her. I might have fallen in love, but I was still a selfish prick. Sophia and I passed each other in the halls. She did her best to avoid eye contact, while I did my best not to fall to my knees and beg for her forgiveness. The hours ticked by as the deadline to turn in our bids neared. In less than 24 hours, everything would be over. One of us would bring our family victory, while the other would never live down the loss. But most importantly, Sophia and I would no longer have any reason for contact. One of us would most certainly be asked to vacate the premises as a guest, and we'd go back to what we'd been for the last 12 years. People who saw each other occasionally at an event and stayed on the other side of the room. The night before the day the bids were due, I couldn't sleep. I'd emailed my final valuation for the hotel to my grandfather, along with my recommendation for the bid. He'd emailed back, asking if I was certain the bid was higher than the Sterlings. I'd told him it was, though I had no fucking clue. At 4:30 in the morning, I couldn't lie in bed anymore, so I decided to go for a run. I usually ran 3 miles, but today I ran until my legs burned, and then I ran all the way back, relishing the agony each pounding step caused in my body. The lobby coffee shop had already opened, so I grabbed a bottle of water and went and sat in a quiet corner where Sophia and I had sat before. A big painting of Grace Copeland hung nearby, and for the first time, I took a good look at it. "That was done from a snapshot taken on her 50th birthday," a familiar voice said. I looked over to find Lewis, the hotel manager, admiring the painting with me. He pointed to the chair next to me. "Mind if I take a seat?" "Not at all. Help yourself." We continued to look at the painting in silence until eventually I asked, "You were with her from the very beginning, right?" Lewis nodded. "Almost. I worked the front desk when this place was a rundown jalopy. The years after she bought out Mr. Sterling and your grandfather were touch and go. There were weeks she couldn't make payroll, but we were all so dedicated to Grace that we figured out how to survive." I looked back at the painting again. Grace Copeland had been a beautiful woman. How come she never married after the broken engagement with old man Sterling? It couldn't have been for a lack of opportunity. Lewis shook his head. "There were definitely plenty of suitors interested in Grace, and she dated a bit. But I think her broken heart never really mended. She learned to live with it in pieces, and occasionally she gave out a sliver or two, but she felt strongly that you only committed to a person when they had your full heart." I looked back at Lewis. "You're married, right?" He smiled. 43 years. Some mornings I can't wait to get out of the house to get a little break from my Agnes. She tends to talk a lot, and mostly about other people's business, but every night, I can't wait to get home to her."
"So do you think it's true?" His brows furrowed.
"What's that?"
"Do you believe if someone takes your heart, you won't be able to love the same way after that?"
Lewis thought for a moment. "I think some people get inside our hearts and stay, even long after they physically leave."
My phone rang at 9:10. The number wasn't familiar, but I had a feeling I knew who it was. "Hello?
Mr. Lockwood?"
"Yes.
This is Otto Potter."
I leaned back into my chair.
"I figured I might be hearing from you." "Well, I just wanted to make sure that what I received on your bid form was correct."
I took a deep breath and blew it out.
"It is. What's written there is my bid on behalf of the Lockwood family." "And you're aware that this isn't a round-robin type bidding process. It's a one-shot best bid offer."
I swallowed.
"I am? All right, then. We'll be back in touch soon."
After I hung up, I closed my eyes expecting panic to set in. Surprisingly, it didn't. Instead, I felt eerily calm. Maybe for the first time in a long time. Or maybe for the first time ever.
Chapter 28. "Well, congratulations again, Sophia." Elizabeth Barton extended her hand as we stood from the conference room table. "Thank you." I managed to force out an acceptable smile. 7 days had passed since I'd received the call that I'd won the bid for my family, yet it still felt like I'd lost the war. My father had flown in to take me out to dinner to celebrate without Spencer, and my grandfather had offered me a position overseeing our family's entire West Coast hotel operation, the largest region we had. Everything was falling into place, yet I'd never felt so empty inside. The reason for that was obvious.
"Will you be staying on to manage the Countess?" Elizabeth asked.
"I'm not sure yet. There's a position open on the West Coast, but I haven't made up my mind where I'll land." She nodded.
"Well, I'll keep in touch until you tell me otherwise."
"Thank you." Elizabeth extended a hand to Otto Potter.
"It was nice meeting you, Otto. I wish you the best of luck with Easy Feet."
"Considering the check you just handed me, I think Easy Feet will be walking on Easy Street for a while."
She smiled.
"Are you heading back uptown? Want to share a cab?"
Otto shook his head.
"Actually, I'm going to hang around here for a bit."
The two shook, and then it was just Otto and me left. He smiled warmly.
"I was hoping I could talk to you for a moment, if you have time."
I extended a hand back to our seats.
"Sure, I have plenty of time."
After we settled in, Otto took a piece of paper from his pocket and unfolded it. He slid it across the table to my side.
"The terms of the bidding were confidential, but I figured now that the papers are all signed, and you're the majority shareholder of the Countess, there's no harm in sharing the bid I received from the Lockwoods."
I picked up the paper and skimmed it. It was the same offer form I'd signed to submit my family's bid, only this one had $1 filled in the spot where the bid amount was to go. My eyes scanned down to the bottom to check the signature. Sure enough, none other than Weston Lockwood had signed it. I shook my head and looked up at Otto.
"I don't understand."
He shrugged.
"Neither did I, so I called Weston to make sure there wasn't a mistake. He confirmed that this was indeed his family's bid."
"But that means he wanted to lose?" Otto took the paper back and folded it up. Sticking it in his pocket, he said,
"I think it's more like he wanted to make sure someone else won."
My heart raced as I stood in front of the door. The last few weeks had been hell. Every step I'd taken had felt like walking over a long bridge. Today was supposed to be the day I finally crossed to the other side, but instead I stood right back at the place I'd started. This morning, my plan had been to sign the legal paperwork for the Countess to make things official, and then try to relax and figure out what was next for me. I'd told my grandfather I'd get back to him about the West Coast job by tomorrow, so I had some big decisions to make. I'd assumed I'd be in a better mental place after today's formalities, but I was more confused than ever now, and I needed to hear things straight from the horse's mouth. So I raised my hand and took a deep breath as I knocked on Weston's hotel room door. It had been 8 days since I saw him in that conference room. His office had been dark and shut, and he was nowhere to be found in the hotel. If I didn't know better, I'd have thought he left. But I did know better, because I'd monitored the hotel's reservation system to see if he'd checked out. As of last night, he hadn't. On a jagged exhale, I forced my knuckles to connect with his door. My heart pounded as I waited for it to open, and my head felt almost as if I had a cold, full of foggy thoughts I couldn't clear. I had so many questions. After a minute or two and no response, I knocked again, this time louder. While I waited, the elevator down the hall dinged, and the doors slid open. A bellman pushed a full luggage cart out and walked in my direction. He tipped his hat.
"Afternoon, Ms. Sterling."
"Call me Sophia, please."
"All right."
He slid a key into a room 2 doors down and proceeded to take the bags inside. When he was done, he pointed at the door I stood in front of.
"Are you looking for Mr. Lockwood?"
"I am, yes." He shook his head.
"I think he might have checked out a little while ago. Saw him with his luggage at the front desk when I came in about 9 o'clock.
It felt like my heart stopped. "Oh, okay." Since there was no point in standing here, I debated going downstairs to the front desk and confirming what the bellman had said. But I wasn't sure I could hold back the tears once I did. So instead, I walked to the elevator and hit the button for my own floor. At least it was afternoon, so technically I wouldn't be drinking in the morning.
It took all of my effort to put one foot in front of the other and exit the car, but when I did, my sluggish steps faltered. I blinked a few times. Weston? He sat leaning against the wall next to my hotel room door with his eyes cast down, his luggage parked next to him. Seeing me, he stood. My heart sped up. What are you doing? Weston looked even more awful than the last time I'd seen him. Dark circles framed his glassy red eyes, and his naturally tanned skin had turned sallow. He'd grown what was almost a full beard, but it wasn't groomed and neat. It just looked like he hadn't bothered to shave. Even so, he was still stunningly handsome.
Could we talk?
I'd just gone looking for him, yet my self-protective mechanism had me hesitating. He noticed and frowned.
Please.
Sure, I nodded. The camera in the corner of the hallway caught my eye. Let's go inside. As I opened the door, my nerves grew frazzled. I needed a drink in the worst way, and that made me think of something. I turned back and looked into Weston's bloodshot eyes. Have you been drinking? He shook his head.
No, just not sleeping well.
Nodding, I set my laptop and purse on the coffee table and took a seat on one end of the couch, adjacent to the chair, where I assumed Weston would sit. But he didn't take the hint. Instead, he sat down on the couch right next to me. After a minute, he reached out and took my hand.
I miss you.
His voice broke.
I've missed you so fucking much.
I tasted the familiar salt in my throat, but there were no more tears left. Before I could figure out how to respond, he continued.
I'm so sorry I hurt you. I'm so sorry I made you doubt what you mean to me.
I shook my head and stared down at our hands. I'm afraid, Weston. I'm afraid to believe you.
I know. But please give me a second chance to show you I can be the man you deserve. I fucked up. It won't happen again. I promise you so.
I stayed quiet for a long time, sorting through the mess of tangled feelings and doubts. When I was finally able to focus a bit, I looked up at him. Why did you bid $1? I could tell he hadn't expected me to know what he'd done.
My family didn't deserve to take care of this hotel, not with what my grandfather did to yours all those years ago, and not with what he thought I should be doing to you. Things needed to be made right, once and for all.
That's very noble of you. But what if your grandfather finds out what you did? Weston looked into my eyes.
He already knows. I flew to see him the day after I turned in our bid, and they informed you that I'd won. I told him in person.
My eyes widened. How did that go? The corner of Weston's lip twitched.
Not too well.
Did he fire you? He shook his head.
He didn't have to. I'd already quit.
God, Weston, why would you do that? To prove your loyalty to me?
It was more than that. I needed to do it for myself, so. It's been a long time coming. This was just the last straw. I realized my family had a lot to do with my struggle with alcoholism. I drank because I didn't like myself. And that started with how they made me feel. I spent most of my life trying to prove to my parents and grandfather that I'm more than just spare parts. I finally realized the only person I need to prove that to is myself.
I didn't know what to say. It sounds like you've done a lot of soul searching over the last week.
I have.
What will you do now? I mean, now that you're not employed by the Lockwoods anymore. He shrugged and gave a faint smirk.
I'm not sure. Got any positions open over at Sterling Hospitality?
I looked him in the eyes. He'd hurt me badly, that was for sure. But it hurt way more being apart from him. Would I get burned if I gave him a second chance? Quite possibly. Nothing in life was certain. Well, except for the fact that I'd be miserable if I didn't take the risk and give things another chance with this man. Weston had jumped off a cliff. Maybe if I did too, together we could learn to fly. Actually, I took a deep breath and stood at the imaginary edge. There is a position at this hotel I think you'd be perfect for. Weston lifted a brow.
Oh yeah? What's that?
Well, it's a position underneath me. His eyes flickered with hope.
Underneath you. I could deal with that.
and it has long hours. His lip curled at one corner, just the slightest bit.
That's not a problem. I have plenty of stamina.
I raised a finger and tapped it to my bottom lip, as if contemplating. Actually, I'm not sure you're right for the position. There are a few other candidates I need to consider first. Can I get back to you?
A few other candidates for underneath you.
I lost the battle to contain my smirk.
That's right.
The spark in Weston's eyes lit to a fire. Taking me completely by surprise, he leaned forward, pressed his shoulder into my chest, and lifted me up off the couch, fireman style. In one stealth move, I was in the air, flipped to my back, and suddenly landed on the couch with a thud. Weston followed, hovering over me.
I think you're right, he said.
A position under you might not be the right spot for me. You got anything available on top? I like control too much, and I think I'd be a much better fit in that department.
I laughed. Nope, sorry, all filled up. Weston growled.
I'll fill you up.
God, I missed him. I cupped his cheek. You do seem like you'd do a good job. Let me give it some thought. Maybe I can figure out the right place for you after all.
I know the right place, sweetheart.
He brushed a lock of hair from my face.
Inside of you. That's where I belong. How do I apply for that job?
I smiled. I'm pretty sure you already have that job, Mr. Lockwood. You've been inside of me for a long time. I was just too afraid to admit it. Weston looked deep into my eyes.
Yeah.
I nodded. Yeah.
I love you, Soph. I'll never let you down again.
I smiled. I love you too, you pain in my ass. Weston brushed his lips with mine. My heart felt full, yet there was still something I needed to know. What would your real bid have been?
For the Countess?
I nodded.
I valued the hotel at just under $100 million, so my bid would have been $2 million for the minority share. Why?
I grinned. My bid was 2.1. I would have won anyway. Weston chuckled.
Is that important to you?
Hell yeah, I would have beaten you fair and square. Now I can lord it over you rather than have you think you let me win. He smiled.
You're going to lord it over me?
Just every chance I get.
You know, I'm in grovel mode now. Eventually it'll irritate me if you rub that in my face. I don't like to lose, but it's fine. There's no one in this world I'd rather fight with or make up with. I see a lot of fighting and fucking in our future.
I rolled my eyes. How romantic.
That's me, Mr. Romantic. You're one lucky girl.
Epilogue. 18 months later. Come in. My office door opened, and a face I hadn't expected to see smiled at me. Louis Cantor glanced around the room. Well, look at you roughing it. My office furniture consisted of a folding table, metal chair, and 3 milk crates I'd used as makeshift file cabinets. A lone light bulb hung overhead from a long orange extension cord. Making my office presentable wasn't high on my to-do list. I got up and walked around my desk to greet him. Clasping hands, I teased, "What, are you slumming today? You know the only view of the park we get at this hotel is the one across the street where crack deals go down." He chuckled. "The construction in the lobby looks good. It reminds me a lot of the early days when I started at the Countess." Somehow I don't think Grace had to pay off bums to stop urinating in the entranceway. "Maybe not, but the energy feels the same. There's a buzz when you walk in that front door. Contractors trying to finish up the last of things. New employees running around to get everything in tip-top shape for when the first guests arrive. It feels like something special is about to happen." I smiled. I thought it was just me who felt it. 6 weeks after the Sterling family had taken over at the Countess, I'd been on my way to visit Mr. Thorne when I noticed a for sale sign in the window of a boarded-up hotel. The real estate agent happened to be inside, so I stopped in. While she talked on her cell phone, I looked around. The place had been a disaster of cobwebs and neglect, but the sign over what had once been the lobby's reception desk caught my eye. Hotel Caroline. At that moment,
I knew my life was about to change. The building had been shuttered for 5 years. Later, I'd come to find out the hotel had closed 1 week to the day after my sister passed away. I'd never been much of a believer in fate, but I liked to think my sister was looking down on me that day, giving me a sign that it was time to get my shit together and grow some balls. This wasn't the best neighborhood right now, but it was up and coming, what I could afford, and I had faith in the area. More importantly, I had faith in myself, finally. 1 month after walking into Hotel Caroline, a day that happened to be my 30th birthday, I handed a check for almost $5 million over in exchange for the deed to a hot mess of a hotel. It was the first time I'd touched a dime of the trust fund my grandfather had created as my compensation for being a body of spare parts for my sister. As a courtesy, that afternoon, I'd called my grandfather and father to tell them I'd gone out on my own. Neither had really gotten over what I'd pulled with the Countess, but letting them know felt like the right thing to do. Neither wished me luck. They also didn't try to tell me I'd made a mistake. Honestly, they didn't give two shits. Not to mention, neither remembered it was my birthday. Good riddance. Don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out. Later that night, I went to see Sophia and celebrated being free exactly the way I'd wanted to. A good fight with my girl. She'd been a little upset that I hadn't mentioned any of my plans to her until after it was too late. I'd bought a rundown hotel and basically excommunicated myself from my family without saying a word. To this day, I'm not sure exactly why I did that. Maybe I was afraid she would try to talk me out of it, or maybe it was just something I needed to do on my own. Either way, she wasn't happy about being kept in the dark. Though she'd forgiven me by the time I gave her 3 orgasms and untied her. "So what brings you down here, Lewis?" I asked. "Everything still set for tonight at the Countess?" "Everything is perfect. The maintenance crew started putting things together the minute Sophia left for the airport yesterday. It'll be all set up by the time you arrive tonight."
"Great, thank you."
Lewis had a small brown paper bag in his hand. He extended it to me.
"Thought you might like this. I found it in one of the boxes we pulled from storage."
My brows drew together. "What is it?"
"A Christmas gift I gave Grace in 1961. I'd forgotten all about it. But take a look. I thought it might be pretty damn fitting for the occasion tonight."
Inside the paper bag, a glass ornament was wrapped in old newspapers. At first, I didn't get the significance. But when I turned it around and saw what was painted on the other side, I looked up.
"Holy shit," Lewis smiled. "Life's a giant circle, isn't it? Sometimes we think we've reached the end and closed the loop, only to realize we've arrived back at the beginning again. Good luck tonight, son."
I watched from the airport escalator with a smile as Weston scanned the crowd, looking for me. Even if he hadn't been the tallest person in most rooms, he'd stick out above the rest. There was something so magnetic about him. Sure, he was tall, dark, and handsome. That went without saying. But that wasn't what set him apart. It was the way he carried himself, feet planted wide, chin held high, a glimmer of mischief in his eyes that matched the cocky grin that always seemed to threaten at the corners of his lips. He stood in baggage claim, holding a bunch of flowers, and I was certain the hearts of a few women in the vicinity were going pitter-patter at the scene. Halfway down, he spotted me, and his ever-threatening grin burst into a full smile. We'd been together more than a year and a half now, and it was almost a year since we'd taken the leap and moved in together, yet his sexy smile could still melt my panties. He strode through the arrival area toward the escalator, his eyes never leaving mine. "What are you doing here?" I asked, smiling as I stepped off. Weston took my suitcase, snaked his arm around my waist, and pulled me to him.
"I was anxious to see you."
He kissed me as if I'd been gone a month, though I'd just left to visit my grandfather yesterday morning. "Well, this was a nice surprise. Thank you for picking me up." Outside the airport, I yanked my coat closed. "I'm definitely not in Florida anymore."
"Yeah, supposed to get snow tomorrow."
"Ooh, I'd love that. I hope it sticks around for Christmas so we can have a white one."
"Sweetheart, If it snows tomorrow and it's still around in 2 weeks, it's going to be a dirty, gray Christmas. I pouted. Don't ruin my dream just because you're Scrooge.
I'm not Scrooge.
Oh, good. So then, can we finally decorate the apartment this weekend?
Yeah, sure.
I knew the holidays were a tough time of the year for Weston, because decorating reminded him of Caroline. But I wanted to do more than we'd done last year, which was not much. On the drive into the city, I filled Weston in on my trip. He gave me an update on Hotel Caroline, which was set to open just after the New Year. Since he seemed to be in a good mood, I thought I'd broach another conversation I wanted to have. So, my grandmother is going to be 80 next month. My grandfather is throwing her a surprise party down in Florida. Weston glanced at me.
Oh, yeah? That's nice.
I thought maybe we could go down for the party.
We?
Yes, we.
You want me to come to a party filled with Sterlings?
I nodded. I do.
What do you think your grandfather would have to say about that?
I mentioned it to him. He's coming around. That was true. Well, sort of. At least this time he hadn't said over my dead body when I'd mentioned him getting to know the man I lived with. I took that as progress. Weston tapped his fingers on the steering wheel.
I'll go if you want me to.
My eyes widened.
You will? It's important to you, right?
Yeah. I know my grandfather would love you if he would just get to know you. Weston shook his head.
Why don't we shoot for tolerating my presence, so you're not disappointed, babe?
I smiled.
Okay.
After we got through the tunnel, Weston turned right instead of left. Aren't we going home?
I need to stop at the Countess.
What for?
I had a package shipped there by accident. I ordered from your Prime account, and the last address you shipped to was there, and I didn't notice.
I yawned. I'm tired. Is it important? I can just bring it home tomorrow after work.
Yeah, it's important.
What is it? He was quiet for a minute.
None of your business. That's what it is.
I grinned. It's my Christmas present, isn't it? We pulled up down the block from the Countess, and Weston parallel parked. He unbuckled and started to get out. I'll just wait here, I said.
No.
What do you mean, no? Why can't I wait here? Weston raked a hand through his hair.
Because the package is in your office, and I don't have the key.
I reached for my purse, which I'd set on the floor. Oh, I'll give you my keys. Weston huffed.
Just come with me.
But I'm tired.
It won't take more than a minute.
I huffed.
Fine, but sometimes you're annoying, you know that?
He grumbled something as he exited the car, yet jogged around to open my door. When he took my hand to help me out, I noticed his palm was sweaty. I didn't think your car had a heated steering wheel.
It doesn't.
So why are your hands so sweaty? Weston made a face and tugged me to start walking. At the entrance to the Countess, he waved off the doorman and swung the door open for me. His mood had shifted from happy to grumpy really fast. Inside, I walked 4 or 5 steps and then stopped. I blinked a few times, confused. What is this?
What does it look like?
It looks like the biggest Christmas tree I've ever seen. Weston guided me closer. We stood a few feet in front of an enormous balsam fir, and I looked up. It towered over me, positioned between the 2 curved staircases that led to the 2nd floor. It almost met the ceiling on the 2nd story. It had to be 30 feet high and made the entire lobby smell like Christmas.
Do you like it?
He asked. I shook my head. I love it. It's huge. Weston winked and leaned into me.
I've heard that before.
I laughed. Seriously, I can't believe you did this. Len from maintenance walked over. He had an extension cord in one hand and a plug to something in the other. He looked to Weston.
You ready?
Weston nodded.
As I'll ever be.
Len connected the cords, and the entire tree lit up in white lights. I couldn't even take a guess how many thousands had to be strung on it. A few seconds later, the tree started to twinkle. It looked absolutely magical. And I'd been so mesmerized by it all that I hadn't noticed Weston moved.
But when I did, the world seemed to stop. Everything except the man down on one knee seemed to fade away. I covered my mouth with my hands, and my eyes immediately began to water. "Oh my God, Weston! And I didn't want to get out of the car!" He chuckled.
That was obviously unplanned, but pretty damn fitting, don't you think? We had to argue right before I came in to do this. We wouldn't be us if everything was smiles and roses.
I shook my head. You're right. We wouldn't. Weston took a deep breath, and I watched as his chest rose and fell. He took my hand, and I finally understood why his palms were sweaty. They still were. My cocky man was nervous. I lifted my other hand to my chest and covered my racing heart. He's not the only one. Weston cleared his throat.
Sophia Rose Sterling. Before I met you, I had no purpose. It didn't take long after you stormed into my life to realize the reason I'd been lost was because you hadn't found me yet. My purpose in life is to love you. Deep down, I knew that from the first day we stepped foot into this place. But it didn't make sense. It took me a while to figure out that love doesn't have to make sense. It only has to make us happy. And you do. You make me happier than I've ever been, Soph. I want to spend the rest of my life fighting with you, just so we can make up. And I want the rest of my life to start today. So, will you please do me the honor of marrying me? Because I would not wish any companion in the world but you.
Tears streamed down my cheeks. I don't know why, but I got down on my knees and pressed my forehead to his. How can I say no when you finally quoted Shakespeare right? Yes, yes, I'll marry you. Weston slipped the most gorgeous, cushion-cut diamond onto my finger. The thousands of lights illuminating the tree above us dimmed in comparison to its sparkle. In true Weston style, he reached around my neck and squeezed hard, bringing my lips to crash against his.
Good. Now shut up and give me that mouth.
He kissed me in the middle of the lobby, in front of the big Christmas tree, long and hard. When we finally came up for air, I heard people clapping. It took a few seconds for it to register that they were applauding for us. People had been watching the proposal. My eyes came into focus as I looked around. Oh my God, Mr. Thorne is here. And is that... I blinked a few times. Is that... Weston smiled.
Scarlet. It is. I flew her in last night to ask her permission to propose. I figured I wouldn't have much luck with your father, and you value her opinion more anyway.
We were still both kneeling on the floor, so Weston helped me up. Scarlet and Mr. Thorne congratulated us, as well as a ton of the staff. I looked up at Weston, still in disbelief. I can't believe you did all this. Do you remember the story I told you about the last time a tree was in this lobby?
I do. He said. The three of them used to decorate a big tree together, right here in this very spot. Grace always hoped our grandfathers would come around someday, and they could all be friends and do it again. That never happened, so she never put another tree in here. That's why I did this. Our grandfathers are too stubborn to come around, but I think Grace Copeland would be happy that the Sterlings and the Lockwoods have finally made friends again.
I smiled. She would be. I'm sure of it. Weston reached into his coat pocket.
Oh, I almost forgot. I had the lights hung so it would look nice for you, but we're going to decorate it together, just like they used to. There are a couple of dozen crates of ornaments stashed behind the tree, but I have the first one for you to hang.
You do? He unwrapped a glass ball from a wad of newspaper and handed it to me.
Lewis gave Grace this as a gift 1 year. He found it in storage yesterday. If I'd had any doubt that proposing to you in front of this tree was the right decision, this ornament solidified that it was meant to be.
I looked down at the Christmas ball, which was personalized like many ornaments still are today. Painted in silver were three stick figures holding hands, the two on the ends a bit bigger than the middle one. And below that, names were painted. Sterling, Copeland, Lockwood, forever.
That's us, with Grace Copeland bringing us together, Soph.
Oh my God, you're right. Weston leaned down and brushed his lips with mine.
Of course I am. I'm always right.
I hung the ornament on the tree and wrapped my arms around his neck. You know, I don't like the ring you picked out, and I think you could have used a bit more creativity in your proposal. Oh, and the tree? It's pretty lame. Weston's eyes widened.
I hope you're joking.
I'm not. I tried to hide my smirk, but failed. Perhaps we should fight about it later when we get home. My fiancé's eyes darkened.
Why wait that long? Meet me in the laundry room in 5 minutes.
This has been The Rivals, written by Vi Keeland, narrated by Andy Arndt and Sebastian York. Copyright 2020 by Vi Keeland. Production coordination by Lyric Audiobooks. Producer Andy Arndt. Andy Arndt and Sebastian York are members of SAG-AFTRA. To keep up with new releases, visit vikeeland.com. This unabridged recording was produced in 2020 by Vi Keeland, who holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Vi Keeland. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.